Did we want to do closed session, Ms. Oaken?
We have some other items on the agenda.
We do, okay.
We need to go back to, let's see, I suggest we go to item...
14?
Why don't we go to item, where is it?
There's not many left.
17.
17.
I know. Okay. Item 17.
All right.
Item 17 is a regional board vision goals and objectives. And we've talked, the board and the staff have talked over the last couple or more years, for example, at our off-site meetings, and also talked specifically about some initiatives such as low-impact development at our Santa Barbara meetings. And we're going to be coming back at our June meeting with a more detailed description of where we are. But we wanted to take the opportunity today to go over with you our development of our attempt to come up with a tangible vision for the Central Coast region, something that's farther sighted than all the daily issues that come before you, the monthly issues that come before you. And so we have our overall vision, which is described here, and Michael's going to go over our handful of goals for that vision. And then what we're really working on currently at a staff level are the individual objectives. But and we've written some of this up in our staff report, and Michael's going to highlight that as soon as he can get to the right page here in the computer.
Got it.
Okay.
Thanks, Roger. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is an update on our water board vision and measurable goals. Last spring, we started talking to the board about this, and we asked the question, what will the Central Coast region look like in 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, and what physical condition will we leave behind when our careers are over? The mission of the board is to protect beneficial uses for future generations, and we're asking the question, are we actually doing that? We mentioned before that we have two choices: protect resources for future generations, which we think requires establishing this vision, developing a vision, and being proactive in achieving it, or we can preside over the demise of resources using a passive or reactive approach, which is actually a pretty common approach with agencies and organizations in general, unless we consciously try to prevent that from happening. What we want to achieve is something like this, where we have a planning process, we work towards physical improvements in the real world, we measure those improvements, verify, report back to ourselves and the public and the board, and establish accountability, and keep going through this productive loop where we make sure that we include the physical improvement in the environment. So it's a constant evolving process where we are measuring the actual changes that we are bringing about. What typically happens is we truncate these important parts out here, and we have this more internal, inter-organizational type process where we're planning, we're listing issues, we're raising the alarm about those issues, trying to get more resources based on those issues, and then assessing and prioritizing it, and just keeping on going around and around in this. Could we grab the lights over there? John. So that process that I just talked about, that truncated process, this one...
Was that your desk?
Yes, this is my desk. Yeah. I'm actually sitting behind it, but you can't see me. Buried there. No, that's a room in our office upstairs, and every time I walk through this room, I think about the amount of energy that has gone into doing the work that is represented there. That's, I probably shouldn't admit it, but that's our library. And I think about all the energy and effort that's gone into that and how much real work resulted in that, from that. I mean, changes in the real world. And that's something that I think we have to be conscious of as an organization. I think about that every time I walk through there. Are the things that we are doing, the things we're working on, bringing about real change, or are we just making that pile higher? So these, as an example of changes in the real world, this is Santa Rosa Island, and at some time in the near future, we're going to present this to the board, so I won't go into any detail on it. But 10 years ago, the regional board did something unprecedented. They took an enforcement action against the National Park Service regarding grazing on Santa Rosa Island. There was major overgrazing there, and they were causing degradation of riparian areas and wetlands. And as a result of that cleanup and abatement order, they changed their management practices greatly. And you can see the difference in these pictures. That's the exact same area 10 years later. And it's starting to recover, and it's starting to act or function as a natural ecosystem once again. Same thing here. It's a different area, but illustrating the same thing, restoring ecological function. We started last spring on our process of establishing a vision and measurable goals. And we got together with all of the staff who wanted to participate, and we've had about up to half of the office participating at different times. We developed, we brainstormed issues here in this room, and we pretty much covered most of the walls here with our flip chart sheets, where we kept track of all the issues that people came up with. We put them all up on the walls and so everyone could see them. And we have kept track of all of that information. We then got together again, and we developed issue statements from that brainstorming session, just a few issue statements. We tried to coalesce all that information into the big issues that are facing the region. Then we established work groups, and several staff members stepped forward and led those work groups, and they developed measurable goals from those issue statements. We then got together with the management team and the work group leaders. We established a vision, or develop the vision language or words that you see in the staff report and that you'll see in a minute here, and we revised those measurable goals. And some common themes that came out of this that many of the people kept bringing up throughout the process, and when I mean people, I mean staff here in the office, and that those are mainly protection for aquatic habitat, the fact that urbanization and land management practices are the big things affecting water quality in Region 3 and will be in the future. We need to do much more monitoring and assessment work, more than we have done in the past and more comprehensive. We need to update the basin plan, and we need to improve the organization. And you could talk, I put that, improve the organization, that's a pretty generic term. If you talk to 10 different people, you will probably get 10 different ideas about what that means. But we think of it in terms of improving the organization to achieve tangible results. So the going back and forth when we were in with our management team and the work group leaders, we went back and forth between the goals, the draft measurable goals that we came up with, and the vision language. And what we ended up with was that our vision for the future of the Central Coast is clean water, healthy coastal environments, and healthy functioning watersheds. And those photos there are of San Luis Obispo Creek, Big Sur, and the estuary, the Morro Bay estuary. So the measurable goals that we came up with, there are five of them, and it was interesting when the management team got together, we initially, as individuals, came into that meeting with our own draft measurable goals, what we thought they should be, and after several meetings and many hours, none of our measurable goals that we came into the meeting with, or came into the room with, were there. Verbatim. They were all changed to produce this, which we think is collectively is better. So we've got five measurable goals. These are the first three. The first one, by 2025, 80% of the watershed riparian systems are healthy, and the other 20% are getting healthier. And I'll talk about some common elements that are present in these goals in a minute, but first I want to go through them. The date that you see there, 2025, it is an arbitrary date. We wanted it to be close enough so that it has some meaning and not too far into the future so that it has no meaning. And we expect that we will modify those dates as we do the assessment work that we're going to be talking about. So the second goal, by 2025, 90% of the land within any watershed is free of impervious surfaces. This is a pretty controversial one, even among the most knowledgeable staff in the office. There are different ways of measuring this and different ways of implementing low-impact development So limiting impervious surfaces is just one of them. So this is an issue that will continue to be debated within our office, but we think it's an important goal. The third one, by 2025, 80% of the land within a watershed will be properly managed to support a healthy, functioning watershed, with the remaining 20% achieving a positive trend. Number four, 80% of groundwater is clean, with the remaining 20% getting cleaner. And the last one, the Water Board will manage all discharges to ensure a healthy coastal environment for humans and wildlife. The last one, we actually had four measurable goals for a long period of time, and then towards the end of our process, a few people pointed out that we're leaving off the marine environment, and it's a big part of what we do, so that fifth goal was added. So there are three things that are common that came out of these goals and that are reflected in these goals that are really important. And one is protecting functioning systems. That first goal, we talked about protecting functioning riparian corridors. That's different than the approach we've used forever in the past, where we've focused on individual parameters. And it's kind of an end of the pipe sort of thinking, where an effluent stream needs to meet certain parameters. We looked at water bodies the same way, that the water bodies should meet certain individual parameters. But the approach we're going to now is more of a multi-parameter approach. And as an example, this is something that our regional monitoring program manager, Karen Worcester, is working on, this biostimulatory risk index, which looks at several parameters. And we put them together, and we're looking at whether the system is functioning as it should with respect to these biostimulatory parameters. These are two sites. One here at Limekiln Creek is healthy with respect to this risk index, and here's another site at Franklin Creek where it is not healthy. And I'm just putting this up here as an example of where we're going. We're going to add to this and include biological parameters and physical parameters for riparian areas.
How do we affect land use changes to reach some of these goals?
I'll get to that in the future, and you bring it up if I don't hit what you're asking for. The second thing is assessment. As I mentioned, we need to do more assessment, more comprehensive assessment than we have done in the past. And this leads to your question, is that we need to use tools like geographical information systems to track land management practices throughout our region. This is already being done on a certain scale. The California Department of Conservation tracks land use and changes in land use over time. For example, they track the conversion of agricultural use as agriculture designations to urban. And that work is important for us, but it's at too low of a resolution. We need a more higher resolution for a regional assessment and for us to actually use that data to determine what's going on in our region. That will be combined with the functional type of assessment that I mentioned earlier, where we're doing to determine whether riparian areas are functioning in the way that they should be. We'll be combining that with this type of information. So we're tracking land use over time, tracking low impact development, where it is being used and where it is not being used, proper land management practices for irrigated agriculture, proper grazing practices, all those different type of management practices, and linking that with the other assessment information on whether systems are functioning properly or not. The third thing that is important, well, before I go to that, this is an example of using a geographical information type system to track changes in land use. This is a NOAA Coastal Change Analysis Program. They are currently implementing this program. It's focused on coastal areas throughout the United States. And this is the location of this is irrelevant. I don't even know where it is. I think it's back east somewhere. But it shows they are tracking development over time in coastal areas. And you can see this between this these two five-year graphs, the significant increase in developed or urban area and the loss of natural habitat. This resolution is, again, too low for what we need. We need to do this kind of work on a higher resolution, and we're brainstorming now on how we can get that kind of data. But that's what we'll be using and tracking over time. It's directly related to that second goal of reducing impervious surfaces in watersheds. The third thing is trends. You'll notice in those goals that we talked about 80% of groundwater being clean and the remaining 20% achieving a positive trend. And the reason that this became an important issue in developing these goals is because we realized that we have problems in our region that are really big and that we will not solve or fix in our lifetimes. This is a map of our region showing the concentration of nitrates in groundwater. Most of every one of those dots you see up there, whether it's a green or red dot, is a well. And this is, I believe, is all DHS data. And if Karen is here, she can correct me on that, but I'm pretty sure this is all Department of Health Services data. We have analyzed the data for all of the red wells. We have not analyzed the data for the green wells. But for those wells that we have analyzed, most of those red wells exceed the drinking water standard for nitrate in groundwater. There's a lot of information on this graph, but I want you to ignore most of it and just focus on the fact that this is a 20-year trend. This is the data that you were just seeing on that map. And the 20-year trend shows this dramatic increase in the concentration of nitrates in groundwater in our region. And this is the kind of thing that we're talking about actually dealing with. You know, we realize that we can't fix this. We're not going to go out and clean up all of this groundwater and get all of this, get these concentrations below the drinking water standard in our lifetime because of the things that are currently in place that cause this, you know, the cultural and economic conditions that cause this situation. But we are saying that we should at least change this trend. If we could decrease the trend, cause it to go flat, or even have it going in the other direction, that's the kind of thing that we want to look at as far as an objective goes and think of the things that we could put into place to make that happen. So that's where that third thing that I mentioned about trends comes into place. Those are the three big things that came out of setting these goals for our region. Right now we're working on objectives. The goals are big. They apply to our whole region over a long period of time. And those goals by themselves, without any more specific action items, really don't mean anything. So here's the first goal. By 2025, 80% of our watershed riparian systems are healthy. The other 20% are getting healthier. Well, how do we get there? And right now we have staff in the office working on coming up with the specific objectives, the short-term objectives, things that we will actually do to achieve this goal over the long term. These are just examples, and there are a bunch of examples that were attached to the staff report. I'm not going to go through them all. I'll just read a couple of these or mention a couple of these so you get an idea for the context. We realize that for these goals, we have to define the terms that we're using, and here, of course, we have to define what healthy means. And as I mentioned, we're going to define that in terms of this multi-parameter approach that we're using for watershed riparian areas. That includes chemical, physical, and biological parameters. We're actually doing that now. We've put together a team led by Chris Rose to develop a basin plan amendment for protecting riparian areas, and it's based on using this approach. And Karen Worster is also working on this. We need to identify the tools and approaches to monitor and assess riparian systems. I already talked about that. We need to implement that assessment work. We need to develop a basin plan amendment to implement the multi-parametric standard. That is when we define the goal, the target that we're after, we want to incorporate that into the basin plan. Identify all the regulatory tools that are available to us to implement this new criteria or this new standard for protecting riparian areas. That last bullet there, that's part of aligning the organization or aligning our programs and the things we do so that they are working toward achieving the goal. There are more objectives here. I won't read them. This is the second goal, 90% of the land within any watershed will be free of impervious surfaces. We need to define the design standards that must be implemented by municipalities to achieve the goal. We think this is largely done through the LID design standards that we already have that are available to us, and we are working with municipalities to implement those design standards. And Roger will be talking about that a little bit more in a few minutes. Again, develop a basin plan amendment to require the design standards or revise the general stormwater permit to do that. We don't know which one of these we will do yet or both, but that's a type of objective that we will be looking at. And again, similar to the last goal, identify the regulatory approaches, strategies, or tools that are available to us and align the organization so that our various programs and efforts are working in, you know, towards the same end. So the next steps, what we're working on right now is finalizing these objectives. And what I've showed are examples. Some of them will probably be made, will be put into final format and will look a lot like what you see here. Others will be new. But we're working on this now, and we plan on bringing those final objectives to the board in June at our off-site meeting. So I'm not sure what the location of that is yet. I don't think we've established that. And some other things that we're doing are working with municipalities to encourage low-impact development. And Roger, did you want to summarize that?
Yeah, actually, we did write that up in the staff report, so I won't dwell on it. But just to quickly summarize, with the City of Santa Maria, several of us went down to the City of Santa Maria, and with the idea of basically promoting low-impact development, not so much from the standpoint of as a regulatory agency, although we certainly try to tie it in with the stormwater program as much as possible, but mostly from the standpoint of trying to indicate to the city the benefits to the city of utilizing low-impact development. And one of the reasons that we selected these three cities here for initial efforts is because they're among the largest cities in our region, and they're among the fastest growing cities in our region, so they have a lot of potential in terms of growth. That doesn't mean that there is an opportunity for I refer to it as redevelopment, and the city manager of Monterey took me to task for that because he said they don't have any redevelopment. What we're talking about with redevelopment with built-out cities is any kind of change in land use. There's an opportunity for low-impact development implementation. But these are the cities that are among the fastest growing, so we've gone to talk with them first. And with the City of Santa Maria, I thought it was really great because instead of just one or two staff people meeting with us, they had basically every department head who would have anything to do with implementation. They wanted to have them there to get everybody on the same page and have all components present. So I think it was a really productive session. With the City of Salinas, we have the ordinance development underway. That's something that the board approved funding for. And that's underway by way of Kennedy Jenks, I believe. And it's not just going to be for the City of Salinas. It'll be a template that will be applicable to other cities as well. We're working with the City of Paso Robles. Donette Dunaway and I just went up there last week to Paso Robles, met with the mayor, and there was some guy named Brad Hageman involved in the meeting. And that was basically kind of an introductory session as to what we wanted to get into in more detail along the lines that we did with the Santa Maria meeting, and to hopefully get the mayor and the key staff really interested in proceeding, and I think that went well. Going back to the City of Salinas, we wrote a pretty aggressive letter to the City of Salinas regarding the stormwater program, and now they're a Phase 1 city. They're the only Phase 1 city in our region. And we said that basically we consider low-impact development to be defined as maximum extent practicable. And there is an out to say or equal, or words to that effect. But basically we're saying we think that you're going to have to come up with something that is either low-impact development or something that's better, and that's what's required as part of the stormwater program. So, like I said, it was kind of an aggressive approach. And they seem to be in agreement with that, and they're proceeding with this ordinance development. So we're going to be having a bigger scale meeting with the City of Paso Robles. That's coming up. We told them about the Salinas ordinance that's going to be applicable to other cities, and they were glad to hear about that. So those are some of our interim efforts that where we're trying to push the ball forward, even though we have this, the grander vision development and goals and objectives underway in a longer time frame. But with some of the examples that Michael had for riparian corridor improvements, obviously we've been doing that for 11 or 12 years because you saw the results. It's the same thing with low-impact development now. We're trying to carry those forward on a parallel course rather than doing these things sequentially.
Okay. The last thing that's mentioned there, the LID, low-impact development grant proposals. I mentioned in the staff report that we received several of those. That's a result of Donette Dunaway also doing a good job of getting the word out to municipalities that grant funds are available. So we're really happy to see that we're receiving some of those grant proposals, and they are now in the system and being analyzed for funding. They're being ranked right now.
We should, pardon me, put a link on our website or something on there, not even a link, but put our projects in the region that are, you know, advancing low-impact development and are good examples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do that. If they're not on there already, we can do that.
Right, maybe they are.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have those three cities up there, but I'm just thinking as we had Gonzales's wastewater this morning, and they are pretty aggressively developing as well as Soledad and Marina, those areas. We should also contact those cities before they get too far along in their development process. And also, probably we should send a notice to all the LAFCOs in the particular counties,
mm-hmm.
because they look at that, the environmental issues, whether they're going to let those areas be annexed or whatever's going to happen to those particular projects.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we put that information out, we'll get more responses. And if we can get into these cities before they get too far along their developments, we'll have more reaction and probably achieve that goal. And,
mm-hmm.
and of course the chair reminded me I'll probably be here in 2025, and I told him I'll be 90 years old at that time, that but I may come back just to make sure that
okay.
this is completed.
Get, come back, you're, that means you would leave. I don't imagine that you would leave.
I doubt
not willingly. I have a question, Michael, if
yeah.
you could go back. Is this the last slide?
No, I okay. think there's one or two more.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's go back. Did you want me to go back?
No, go ahead. Once you finish.
Okay. A couple other things. Getting the word out, that's a good segue. Roger and I met with the director of the Water Education Foundation a couple of weeks ago. They published this brochure that I think all of you have. It's called Western Water. And they do highly professional publications and public outreach work. And we met with them as part of this process of brainstorming, trying to figure out better ways and new ways to get information like this out to the public and to municipalities. So we want to establish a working relationship with this organization. It's a nonprofit organization. Set some funds aside, probably from SEP projects, and do projects with this organization to get the word out on various things that we're working on, and especially low-impact development. So we're working on that as well. Roger mentioned the low-impact, I think you mentioned the low-impact development workshop that we did, and it's also mentioned in the staff report.
Actually, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
It's in the staff report.
It is in the staff report, and we are brainstorming whether we need to do that again. The chairman mentioned doing that in the northern part of our region as well, so we're considering that. And how the best way to do that, and perhaps working with an organization like this, the Water Education Foundation, to do it. Another thing that we're working on is educating ourselves, educating staff here in the organization. And we're working with the director of the executive program at UC Davis. His name is Gene Crumley. He has a great deal of experience in helping organizations improve and become more performance-based. And part of that effort, we're trying to bring the entire executive leadership program that is part that is taught at UC Davis here to our office, and it's a 9 or 10 week program at Davis. Involving 9 or 10 classes. We want to bring all of those here, and it will probably be spread out over a year, but it's part of the picture, part of the effort to make us more of a performance-based organization. And we're working with Gene to actually tailor that program to us and what we are trying to accomplish here. Okay. Tam Dodak. I think that's how you pronounce her name. Dodak. She's the new chair of the State Water Board. I thought this was interesting and we should put it up here. She said, my paramount goal as chair of the State Water Board is to ensure a performance-based organization that delivers results, not only in doing our job, such as adopting policies, issuing permits, etc., but in demonstrating actual measurable improvements in compliance, water quality, and beneficial uses. And, you know, I read that and I said, good. It's about time. That's what we need to be doing. That's what this is about. And I think that we're on the right track. I think that we're looking at making changes in the real world, measuring what those changes are, reporting those changes back to ourselves, to the board, and to the public. And eventually, we're going to actually presenting the measurements, the actual data, to the board on a regular basis and publishing it to our website on a regular basis to inform us and Sacramento, the legislature, the governor's office, et cetera, Cali PA, on what we are actually doing. And what we see, which I think is interesting, is a statement like that coming from the new chair. I think it's in direct response to us talking about this kind of thing and saying how we want to change. And you know, Roger Briggs has been emphasizing this approach at the MCC meetings. And I think it's because of that that we see this response from the state board. So I think we're on the right track.
If I could add a couple things. Michael mentioned that the meeting that we had with the Water Education Foundation folks. And this is a little bit of a side note that is not as directly related with the overall vision, but it's more stormwater related. One of the reasons they wanted to meet with us is to say, here's what we do. Do you see opportunities for them to utilize their resources? And one of the things that we pointed out is that all of our stormwater permittees, and we got a lot of the phase two stormwater permittees, as you're well aware, that are just kind of coming online now. We're trying to get them online, and they all are required to do this educational component, and yet a lot of the cities are not equipped to do that. That's not something that they necessarily normally do, especially some of the smaller cities. So one of the things we talked about is if they could come up with something that would, again, be sort of a template sort of presentation, maybe different media that a lot of the cities could use, that might be a real benefit. And there's a big universe of phase two communities that are required to do this, not just in our region, but elsewhere in the state and the nation for that matter. So that was I think fortuitous timing to get together with them and realize that there was a potential mesh there that would be mutually beneficial. And then Tam Dodak's statement there and what Michael was just saying in terms of some folks in Sacramento being interested in this, I was going to mention this during the EO report, but the Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting is coming up, and that's scheduled for April 24th, 25th. And we were asked if we could present our work on our vision development and our work on becoming a performance-based organization because of that statement by Tam. And the reason we were asked is because, as Michael said, we've kind of advertised that we're working along these lines. So it's coming around the horn. They've actually asked our chair if he could present something on that. So we'll have to work together on that. But it's again indicative of the Tam's statement and the fact that we think we're on the right track, obviously, but it looks like maybe some of the folks at the state board think we're on the right track as well. There's a tie-in with our vision development with being a performance-based organization, in that part of the idea of making a change towards tangible results in the organization is to institutionalize the vision and those goals and objectives. And one of the ways to institutionalize it is to have that reflected in individual performance goals and evaluation of how we're doing as individuals towards achieving those goals. So we've done things like refining our performance evaluation criteria to align it more with our attempts to realize this vision, and we're already starting to implement that. So, anything else to add, Michael?
No, but I wanted to make sure that I answered your question about how would we track land use changes and how would we regulate that?
Well, actually, not that. We can go back to that slide. And, yeah, the question was more about not the tracking. I think what I picked up is that we don't know what the current status is for any of those measurable goals.
Correct.
That we won't know that for a few years until we get into the assessment.
Yeah, or sooner. I think
we'll know whether we're already exceeding the goal,
right,
or how far we have to get in order to reach it.
Right. And if we're exceeding those goals, obviously we've got to adjust those goals. They need to be ground truths, what we're calling ground truthing them. Right. And for instance, in the first goal about riparian corridors, if we determine that we're meeting 80%, 80% are healthy according to the standards that we develop, the criteria or standard that we develop, then we're going to adjust that goal and say perhaps it should be 95, with 5% getting better.
Can you get to that slide? It's not a picture-type slide. It has it's the timeline.
You mean in 2025?
Well, yeah, it's one of those. There's backwards. It's the one that, yeah, that one. Okay, so it's going to take us 2.5 years.
Yeah, remember these are examples.
Right, now I understand.
Yeah. So, and the timelines are examples. So
right.
We put times on there just to give you an idea of what we're thinking about in terms of when we establish an objective. We're not talking about doing it in 10 or 15 or 20 years.
Right.
We want these to be short term, and obviously we want to be as short as possible.
That we can use. And give me an example, like for the very last item, what would a standard be, for instance?
The last bullet, identify all regulatory tools?
Yeah, right, that we can use to implement the standard. What is the standard?
If the standard...
The multi-parametric standard, what...
If we use this multi-parameter approach that we're talking about and we establish the target, right? We say when we're considering all of these parameters, this system will be a healthy functioning system if it meets this target, a defined target. And what is the target? I've got to try and find my own slides here.
Yeah, okay.
See, it'll be defined in this type of... analysis, where you want it to be, the results, you want it to be as tight around the center as possible. And we'll define what that is, what is acceptable and what is not. There's a point at which, when you get away from the center here, where the system is no longer functioning. And we can describe what that is. I don't know what it is yet, but we know that this one is probably not functioning. Mm-hmm. Is Karen here?
Okay. So each of the five constituents... Each of the five constituents on the bottom left-hand quadrant are the points of the pentagram.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't make that clear.
Okay.
Each one of these is an axis that represents one of these parameters. And I don't want to give you the impression that this is it. This is the measurement we're going to make. This is only part of it.
Right.
We're going to add biology, and we're going to add the physical parameters, like geomorphology.
Okay, there's some areas that we... historically have not really been involved with, like land use practices.
Mm-hmm.
So how far do you imagine we are going to go in terms of trying to dictate or encourage?
Our irrigated ag requirements say that farmers have to use best management practices. And we don't define those in specific terms. We don't say this is the specific management practice that you must use, and I don't think we want to do that. But we do want them to use best management practices to control the discharge of pollutants from their property, and we will measure that to see whether they are doing it or not. You know, right now, the farmers are reporting that information to us. They're saying, for the most part, I think they're saying, yes, we are doing it. Yes, we are using best management practices. But we have to evaluate whether that's true or not. And part of that evaluation is what's coming off the property. So we are already regulating land management practices in that sense. And low impact development is, again, we're already starting to regulate that kind of land management practice, you know, whether it's urban sprawl or low impact development and the design standards that are being used there.
Can you foresee a basin plan amendment where you might require property to be able to retain and treat on-site rainwater or stormwater before it's being discharged?
That's part of the low impact development design standards. The standard is there, you know, to keep the stormwater on site and to let it infiltrate back into the ground.
So we might see something in the basin plan.
I think it could be in the basin plan. It could be in the next stormwater permit, okay. The next general permit. I think it's going in that direction.
Okay.
You know, Celeste Cantu, she sent out a memo several months ago that said low impact development should be one of the board's highest priorities. Establishing it, pushing it, making it a reality.
That was associated with the consolidated grants program, mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. to indicate that they would basically get extra points,
right.
as far as grant applications go.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Sounds like things are on a roll, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so for each of those measurable goals, you have the same, you know, kind of timeline set out.
Yes. The objectives will have different timelines, you know, the shorter term,
right.
different timelines, and they'll be different for each under each goal.
Okay.
But we'll talk Good. More about those specific objectives in June.
Good. Okay. Any questions from the board? No. All right. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you.
For this item.
Okay. Mr. Dugan?
Yes.
You wanted to address the board on this item?
Yes, I did.
The Tam DeDuke comment on there was, I was well pleased with that. I want to talk about the watershed program for Los Osos Valley, how this may be affected. You may be getting a project from Los Osos that may incur having ponding and wetlands out in Los Osos Valley, which, of course, is the watershed program is all involved with that. I can't say that's what you're going to get because we still have a ways to go. But we're working on wetlands, ponding wetlands, and egg exchange. And hopefully in those areas we'll be able to bring down a lot of the problems we have with agriculture where they're loading the runoff and into our creeks and stuff, and it's ending up in the estuary. I had written an email to Sorrel Marks wanting to converse on her about the watershed program for Los Osos itself, and she says that we're part of a greater plan. And so I went towards the and looked at that information and found it really lacking in the area of drainage, in the area of Los Osos itself as far as runoff is concerned. I'm on the water committee for Los Osos as an alternate. And we've only met once. But what I am trying to achieve with this water committee is to point out to them that it's about the water. Wastewater is a big deal because that's our byproduct. But we need to take control over our watershed management as well. And we need to be a part of that, those decision makings. And I believe that our sphere of influence, or at least where we can speak towards that, will be perhaps a project out there with wetlands, but also to be involved with decision makings as well as granting and funding for drainage for Los Osos, something that's been not really looked at properly because we do have a non-point source pollution problem out there. I go out every time it rains hard and I check it out, make notes, shoot video, and I can tell you where we have our main problems at. I believe it's very lacking in the watershed program for Los Osos to only be contributing the wastewater plant as our contribution. I think what the new board is trying to do is actually contribute to the watershed program as well as denitrification and take care of our wastewater problems out there. I want to take it a step further as I saw envisioned here. I really was impressed with what I saw here, and I also want to make one more thing clear. When I spoke towards the politicization of your guys' function here, I meant both staff and the board, I do not believe, have politicized their actions. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay.
On item number three, unless there are any questions.
Item number three?
Yeah.